Okay. Remember,
we appear to be rolling now.
Oh, good. Remember, each episode's supposed to open with a can opening, but that's okay. yes. So welcome to When Bustin' Made Me Feel the Best. Is that what we're going to call this one? What should we call it?
I'm fine with that.
Did Bustin' make me feel the best in 2016 or 2024?
Talking about ghost busting or busting a nut?
Oh, welcome to Movie Baiters, where we debate things. what do they mean when they, like, when Ray Parker Jr. said, Bustin' makes me feel good, do you think he meant?
Oh, I'm sure there's a double entendre intended there.
Oh. Okay,
I'm totally talking about blowing a load.
Just in case you're at all confused, this is a JK production of Movie Baiters, a podcast featuring the Farks brothers. I'm Kyle.
I'm Nick.
And we are going to be discussing which Ghostbusters was the better sequel to Ghostbusters or is more... A Ghostbusters, how would you say it?
Well, follow-up, because one of them objectively is not a sequel, one of the two that we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, one's a reboot and one's a sequel.
Because we are talking about, and per your request, we're comparing Ghostbusters...
Answer the call.
We call it that now? Answer the Call.
Well, that's what it was called at the time.
Not in theaters and not on the screen, but I know that, yeah, the box art now says that.
Yeah, I was going to say the Blu-ray case.
Like, is that a tagline or is that a subtitle?
It's like what they did with Marvel movies at a certain point where we're not going to put two in the title because then people will be like, oh, I can't watch that one.
Yeah.
They've continued that, obviously, with the Lego sequel and then the sequel to the Lego sequel.
Well, and they changed the name of that one Tom Cruise. Edge of Tomorrow became Live, Die, Repeat. Live, Die, Repeat went from a tagline to a title.
Oh my God. Somewhere in here, that's a Doug Liman movie.
Yeah.
And I know that it's going to come up. Actually, I rewatched 2016 Answer the Call or Lady Ghostbusters, whatever I'm supposed to call it, today. And they make a reference to Patrick Swayze and bring up Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. And Doug Liman obviously just remade Roadhouse as a reboot. He didn't make a Lego sequel when they did that 2006 Roadhouse 2.
Yeah.
It's a Lego or it's a reboot.
Yeah.
So what we're kind of debating, and here's the narrative cinematic state we're in now, is, well, we can either have reboots or Lego sequels. We can't have what they had in the mid-80s, which was a completely new thing, you know, a high-concept sci-fi or horror thing starring a bunch of comedians. Like, what's the last thing you can name? Like, you know what? Tropic Thunder. That's a high-concept war movie starring a bunch of comedians.
Yeah.
Well.
I guess it's blending genres, it's blending comedy with war, right? And that kind of a little bit of action. I think Ivan Reitman himself directed that that movie Evolution in 2001, which was like Ghostbusters but with aliens.
I agree. That is what
and
that
it
was.
Didn't go over very well.
I liked that movie because I saw it in high school. It came as like a two DVDs together.
Yeah.
And like $9 for two DVDs back in the mid 2000s or something like that. Yeah, so it was a great deal at Shopko, which is a upper Midwest shopping center. We should mention we're both upper Midwest filmmakers, and that's why we're going back and baiting movies so that we can study the art and become better filmmakers, brother.
Maybe. We'll see.
So we're going to try to discuss Ghostbusters. The debate points we're going to go over and we're going to agree on like what it means to talk about this. At the top, we're going to try to talk about what makes a Ghostbusters movie. And I think that should be what made Ghostbusters like impactful for us when we first saw Ghostbusters. Do you agree or do you like?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we're going to talk about the funny in terms of like, I think there's Ghostbusters that focus more, because we've got five of them now, there's ones that focus more on the humor and ones that focus more on the horror. And if you're going to evaluate 2016 versus 2024, one might be funnier and one might be scarier. I don't know. And then you've already given me story criticisms for the Ghostbusters you're going to be defending, which was interesting to me because when I was rewatching... Because you're gonna take Frozen Empire and I'm gonna take Answer the Call.
No, I'm not taking one or the other.
That's better for the debate if you do.
I'm not, but it's not true to me, so I'm not going to.
And then we're going to discuss the story after we discuss the funny. And you've given me criticisms of Frozen Empire. Do you have criticisms of Answer the Call?
I'm sure I'll come up with some.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Good, good. And then we'll hit ghosts, haunting, and scares.
Yeah.
And which one, you know. But just for the record, though, I am going to try to defend the 2016 one because that's how woke I am.
Sure. Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe through this, I'll end up realizing that, had more points of support for one over the other. I didn't go into it tallying them up and expecting to be one.
I didn't.
To be the winner from my point of view.
I went into Frozen Empire wanting it to be the best Ghostbusters I could see. But from the top, what we're talking about here is that we live in a media landscape that is kind of dystopian because all we can have are not nice new things, but reboots or Lego sequels or sequels to Lego sequels.
Yeah.
Creed 2. And I like Creed 2. It's a great movie. Then we're going to talk about setting. So they've kind of shifted around where Ghostbusters is. And I think we should, are you comfortable talking about it both from the, where it quote unquote takes place versus also where they shot it? Cause I think that has an impact on both of them. One was shot in Boston. One was shot in London. Neither is New York.
Yeah. That's going to, it's down the list. It definitely plays a role, but we'll get into it when we get into it.
Watching both of them, another topic we'll hit is the 1984 of it all, because we're talking about a movie that came out in 1984, and all of the sequels have tried to repeat beats of a movie that came out 40 years ago or 30 years ago in the case of Answer the Call, and I don't want to be negative because as our spouses have both told us, or our, significant others have both told us, we both need to be more positive. And I think we can both be positive when we talk about the gear of Ghostbusters.
Which
gear you liked. There's definitely gear things in both of them that you could talk about. Gear, also the car being part of the gear.
Yeah, sure.
And then finally, the legacy characters, the Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Minnesota's own Ernie Hudson.
Burnsville's on Ernie Hudson.
He's
got a house. I don't know if he still has it, but he for sure did at least one point.
Oh my god!
My uncle would see him at Tint World down the road from here.
Should we? Because he get his car stinted?
Yeah, in the same block as my uncle's insurance agency.
That is awesome. I just watched the Larry David episode where he was dealing with tinted cars because Jason Alexander gets his car tinted, and he really hated that. Because he's trying to date his ex-wife.
Oh.
Okay, so let's hit it up. When did you first see Ghostbusters? How old were you? What year was it?
It was before the second one. I mean, I was 3 months old when it came out.
Yeah.
Everyone
knows how old you are.
I know I was watching it before Ghostbusters 2 came out because I remember seeing Ghostbusters 2 twice in the theater when I was 5.
Oh, wow.
And I knew already that, that this was... So I was probably 3 or 4.
Okay.
And I had the toys. The toys still exist in a box, in my parents' house.
Oh, man.
That's gonna play into the gear question. Other than they fired lasers in 2016 in Answer the Call, I don't know anything. I don't remember specifically anything different about the gear. Other than the fucking Faraday cage. But whatever.
Well, that's a later topic. So you saw it as a young youth, between my daughters' ages.
Yeah.
And in fairness, I think my older daughter saw the parts of the 2016 Ghostbusters, or maybe the original one when she was 3.
Yeah.
I don't know how significant it'd be because as we've discussed before, she's watched Godzilla and King Kong. She's not allowed to see the new one in theaters, I'm told, by my wife, which I will respect unless she's out of town. And let's see. So I was, I think, 8 or 9 when I first saw Ghostbusters. It's one of those things that I was aware of because there was the cartoon, but I wasn't allowed to watch it because my mom listened to too many people at church.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, people at church who are definitely listening to this. And funny enough, we watched it on Easter with people from my church that my parents were actually friends with. As I recall it, so like 8 or 9, the dads are in like the living room just watching whatever's on TV, and they found Ghostbusters on cable. And that's how I first saw it, like from the start. That's how I saw Blues Brothers the first time.
Okay.
And it was one of those things where, you know, like 1975 cast of SNL, and then, you know, I guess Bill Murray's like 76, 77 or something. Like when those guys were in a movie, my parents would stop on it on cable, and then they'd also... Hey, Kyle, you think you want to be funny, or we think you're weird or funny. Funny, like, the you know, the mean way they mean it in Goodfellas. So come watch this. I'd wanted to see it, and I loved it. It was impactful for me, but I was after the age. I feel like 7 on up, you start getting jokes. Like, you don't get The Simpsons when you're, like, 6.
Yeah.
I feel like you get it, like, you don't get it in kindergarten. You get it in, like, 1st or 2nd grade after you've gone through, like, a year of people kind of being the way people are in society. So what made you like it? Because you were a horror kid, or did you even like it when you were 3 or 4?
Oh yeah, because I liked it enough to want to see Ghostbusters 2.
Okay.
Yeah. And at the time, you know, it flashier, bigger budget, I assume, you know, I liked Ghostbusters 2 more as a 5 and 6 year, you know, for a while until well, into probably my 20s, and like, oh, yeah, the first one's better.
For me, that's like Beverly Hills Cop 3. I loved when I was a kid,
because
I watched the TV versions of those movies, and the third one has like kind of like how the second Ghostbusters has the Super Nintendo to control the Statue of Liberty,
or Game Boy or something.
It wasn't a Game Boy.
Yeah, no, Super Nintendo wasn't out yet, so it was like some...
It was a Nintendo, like, add-on thing.
Yeah.
It was like a special controller, and then they used that on the... Yeah, and that was probably a tie-in with the video game and all that kind of stuff. Have you played the video games?
No, I have the that 2009 one that's, like, considered, like, the real Ghostbusters 3 until, you know, until we actually started getting real... You know, we have 3 Ghostbusters movies now.
yes, we do. I would love to play through that game sometime with you.
I never got very far into it.
Oh my god! And it has like a story and stuff too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
it's all the cast doing the, you know, their voices.
Well, we'll talk about this more when we get the characters. But there's been like a bunch of different, you know, there was always going to be this Ghostbusters 3. Like before 2009, when the video game came up, it was like, oh, well, maybe it'll be Chris Hemsworth. Maybe it'll be Channing Tatum.
As far back as, like, the 90s, it was, like, going to be Chris Farley and Will Smith. And
Adam Sandler was probably in that.
Yeah, there, Ben Stiller, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've heard, like, recently I heard, like, Patton Oswalt, Kumail Nanjiani. Like, this is, like, the 2010s kind of Ghostbuster. Was like, oh, we're definitely going to make one someday.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like... I feel as though I was slightly influenced by culture, and like I was interested in it because it dealt with supernatural things, and like that was taboo for my Christian upbringing.
Yeah, that was probably part of it for me, because I was getting into horror early on. So, you know, Gremlins, same time. Also saw Gremlins 2 in the theater the same way, you know, a year after Ghostbusters 2, same thing. Had seen the first one on TV. It was part of the upbringing, you know, and it's like, oh, take me to go see Gremlins 2, take me to go see Ghostbusters 2. So it was already there.
On the topic of the debate, I saw Frozen Empire with my 11-year-old niece, who liked Frozen Empire better than Afterlife, because she saw Afterlife when she was 8, and it freaked her out. She had nightmares for 2 days.
Okay.
As in my sister, when she went and saw it a second time with her daughter, my niece.
Yeah.
When she comes home, she has nightmares after seeing Ghostbusters Afterlife, and my sister's like, let's see it again.
Yeah. Okay. I guess, 3 years makes a difference, because this one, I don't know, that, I guess the dog, if you're not prepared for the monster dogs, that's scary, but people, like, actually fucking die in Frozen Empire, though.
Yes.
In Ghostbusters, I can't think of anyone dying. Yeah. Other than Egon at the beginning of Afterlife. I mean,
Egon at the beginning of Afterlife. We should probably say this, I can mix around the categories, but that the douchey guy who definitely has a name, who's the bad guy who becomes a spirit in Answer the Call. dies so that his spirit can go, you know, infect Thor, and then Thor's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so which movie, Frozen Empire or Answer the Call? And again, I'm going to defend Answer the Call because I think it's going to be easier for you to defend why Frozen Empire is more of a Ghostbusters movie. Like the ineffable essence that is Ghostbusters.
Well, I had points for both, and it comes down to subjectively, there's certain things objectively that make a Ghostbusters movie more of a Ghostbusters movie, and that's the objective stuff is like what makes it more in common with the premise of the first one, which is, you know, beyond just people with proton packs. It's like the original is like, here's these, you know, middle-aged guys. They're scientists, but they're also kind of like,
they kind of suck.
And they're getting in over their heads, taking out like a 20% mortgage on a house or something like that to finance it and all that shit. And you know, it's like there's that, and people can kind of out of their depth, in discovering supernatural.
One of the other things I throw in there is that you kind of touched on it with like 20% mortgage, 20% interest rate on a mortgage was like they're blue collar. Mm-hmm. But even though Venkman is he's a doctor at the beginning. Isn't he?
Yeah, and so is they're all three of them are. Prior to
so they're all professors, but then they go and work out of a firehouse, which is very much considered much more blue collar.
Yeah,
and they get fired
from the university because they were just tinkering around in, you know, academia or whatever.
Yeah, and I feel like Afterlife and Answer the Call do a good job of, oh no, we're being, you know, shunned out of academia, or oh no, we're a poor family who, because, you know.
Well, that's one where Answer the Call has that, that nails that part, you know, being shunned from academia, that one goes to Answer the Call because that pretty literally happens.
I'm smiling because I disagree in the sense that, and, only, what is it? A third of the country has college degrees. And now one third of people who graduate with a college degree don't make as much as somebody who just hadn't gone to college and taken on that debt load.
Yeah.
So for me, like 2016 is back when we were like, oh, it's kind of the cresting of everyone needs to go to college. Everyone needs to get a degree. And like, that's clearly not true. Like we need more blue, like we need firemen. We need nurses.
Yeah.
We need plumbers. You know what I mean? And like they treated the Ghostbusters like plumbers in the first Ghostbusters and trying to carry over the, like, we don't respect plumbers, but like we gosh darn need plumbers and we need people to continue to go and learn, you know, plumbing because that's the infrastructure of society, right?
I guess, but I'm not following because, like, how does that negate them being shunned from academia? Like, Kristen Wiig is a professor, or she's not, she's something.
Yes, they're all like, what's it, Melissa McCarthy is also at another college.
Yeah.
And then she gets fired after Kristen Wiig gets fired.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying is just that, like, since I don't see academia as being the be all end all for society, it's the first Ghostbusters to me marries the idea of people being smart, but also being practical. And like, you think of pragmatism when you think blue collar, you think of white collar, like, oh, that's the intelligentsia kind of stuff. And I'm just, I rail more against that as I've gotten older.
But I don't think real world definitions of what academia was in 1984 and what it was in 2016 have anything to, I mean, they're both in a academic setting. And then they both are not.
Well, you and I grew up in the people who were born in the 80s grew up with the notion, oh, you got to go to college. If you don't go to college, you're a loser.
Well, and that's talking about students. We're talking about
professors. Are,
I
don't want to get too far off in the academia. I think it's a classist thing. But what I like about the first Ghostbusters, and I would actually give it more to Frozen. I would give it to Afterlife, not Frozen Empire. There's not enough of a class struggle in Frozen Empire for me, but it's very, very apparent in Afterlife. So I'm carrying over those beats into Frozen Empire.
Yeah, part of it. I wouldn't call it a class struggle, but it's the first one kind of carried over what you saw in like Animal House and Caddyshack.
Yes.
Where it's not a class struggle, but it's a clash. It's a class clash.
Well, yeah, because like,
and it's like when they're in the hotel ballroom, and you just hear the sound. You get the fucking tight ass out there telling the people their room will be ready in 5 minutes, but you hear the tables being destroyed and everything, and the silverware, everything.
Class.
It's like that. It's like it's the same idea as like Rodney Dangerfield showing up and fucking with Ted Knight in Caddyshack and pissing off Ted Knight because, you know, Rodney Dangerfield doesn't know golf etiquette. You know, it's that sort of thing.
And I guess in the favor of the movie that I'm going to argue for, because we are taking sides, is in Answer the Call, you have the MTA worker through Leslie Jones.
Yeah.
And that's the blue collar.
Yeah.
She even has a limp at the beginning of the movie, which goes away.
I never noticed that.
It looked like she's limping in that first scene we meet her in when she goes to find the ghost in the subway. And I was like, oh, that's a cool character thing. Does that carry throughout? And it does not. Because she's in a shortish skirt like two or three scenes later and she's not.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been cool if she kept the limp throughout because, yeah, you know, whatever. So which movie made you laugh harder? And did Frozen Empire make you laugh?
So it's funnier than they paid more attention to comedy than they did in Afterlife. That's where I'm going to give it to, like, for comedy, I would give it to see that there's no cut and dry, like yes or no with any of these. Even when I say I'm going to give comedy to, Answer the Call, that between the two of them, yeah, it's more focused on comedy. You have to be on board with the brand of comedy you're getting with Answer the Call, though, which is different from everything before and after it as far as Ghostbusters goes. It's, yeah, not the same brand of comedy. It's weird because it has a similar pedigree. It has people doing who were very successful doing R-rated comedies in the years prior, the same way Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis and Bill Murray were doing, like, Stripes and...
Animal House.
Harold Ramis co-wrote Animal House. Meatballs was not R-rated, but, you know, it's one of those...
It's a
70s PG movie, so there's probably, like, you know, kids calling each other the F word and stuff.
I watched Bad News Bears 1974.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
And they say, there's the little kid saying the N word in that movie with hard R.
Yeah.
And other racial slurs. Yeah. And, like, I'd heard that before.
Yeah.
And
that's, I'm sure that's PG.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. It's a 70s PG. So we went through movies like that to tone it down, and that's what Paul Feig?
Yeah, it's Paul Feig. And he's from Michigan, so, like, I was always going to play for his team.
So
because...
they were doing the same thing, but they're just, their comedy style worked in...
Answer the Call.
Well, it worked in other movies. I'm not even saying it doesn't
Like Spy
work.
And The Heat.
Yeah, and Bridesmaids. Yep. Like, all those are good, right? And I'm not saying it doesn't work in Ghostbusters. In Answer to the Call, I'm just saying it's a totally different type of comedy.
It was postmodern because it's a derivative of Judd Apatow.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Adam it's McKay. Different.
Yeah, it's... like Judd Apatow and Adam McKay, I feel like, are an evolution of 70s and 80s SNL. Like, because the SNL of all of this, it comes back because you've got Kate McKinnon, you've got Melissa McCarthy, and then the original spine of the thing is three guys from SNL, right? Because Ramis was a writer, and then Eddie Murphy was supposed to be there originally, but then he couldn't do it for...
But we're also talking 84. Well, they were off SNL by 84. We're talking 70s SNL versus
2010.
Late 2000s SNL.
Because Kristen Wiig had left by the point Answer the Call comes in.
Yeah.
And Leslie Jones and Kate McKinnon are still on.
They were at the time.
Yeah.
So it's still different, even though they're coming from SNL. And just the same way it's like successful R-rated comedy makers, you know, toning it down to a PG-13, similar pedigree but still totally different comedy style. They were more focused on comedy, and I think I would probably, well, did I, I'd have to think, did, how much did I actually, I think I laughed during Answer the Call.
When's the last time you watched it? Was it 8 years ago?
No, I've watched it more recently.
Okay. I watched it today.
Yeah, fair. So I think their comedy is much like, oh, we're going to have this random gag about wontons in the fucking wonton soup, and we're going to fucking carry that on for God knows how long. And so, and we love it so much, we're going to come back to it in the middle of one of three credit sequences, end credit sequences. Like, that's where
cab driver from Deadpool, man.
That's where
you got to do.
That's where comedy was at in 2016, and love it or hate it, and I neither love it nor hate it.
Well, and did you find Paul Rudd that funny in Frozen Empire? Because for me, it's like I watched him do the same thing in Ant-Man last year, and I liked it about as much as I liked Ant-Man.
Okay.
And I didn't dislike Quantumania. I liked Quantumania. Other people didn't as much as I did.
Yeah. I don't know if I laughed at any of Paul Rudd's stuff. It takes a lot to get me to laugh out loud.
McKenna Grace, though, in that first afterlife, I feel she's funnier there, but she's doing the pre-70s type of comedy, which is more like set up joke kind of thing. She's doing more traditional comedy, but it's funny because it's juxtaposed in a trial.
Well, yeah, the comedy, I think, is because she's so awkward.
Yeah.
Like, she's... the character has an outdated sense of comedy, and you're laughing at her because she's trying to interact with humans and she's not good at it.
I wonder what the breakdown between people who laugh at her versus who are laughing with her, because to me, comedy kind of appeals to,
I think it's older the audience member, the more they're laughing, think they're laughing with her. I think
that, that's good.
That was like the funniest stuff in Afterlife, I feel like.
Yeah, she's
other
the
than
funniest.
Paul Rudd showing child's play to the students.
Or the mini Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Joe, yeah.
They're funny in their, like, oh, they're just killing themselves.
In the first time, yeah, now they're just annoying.
Okay, so you found them, like, annoying. You found them Gremlins 2-ish in Frozen Empire.
There's no reason for them to exist.
Yeah, like, why did they bring them from...
There wasn't really even any reason for them to exist. Well, no. It kind of made sense because it was Gozer.
Yes, Gozer was making the... In the Walmart.
In the Walmart, yep.
And, that's... The other thing is that Frozen Empire gets an advantage from being a sequel to Afterlife and being a sequel to two other revered movies. What about the story? Because I feel like we're kind of on the same page of Answer the Call is the funnier one. What makes a Ghostbusters movie? Hard to say.
Although the comedy that is there in Frozen Empire, I do feel is closer to the comedy of Ghostbusters 1 and 2 when it's there. It's hard to put my finger on, but it's just, some of it's kind of, that deadpan style that was kind of like, and that's kind of one of the trademarks of the comedy of not just Ghostbusters, but like the people who made it and what they were doing around that time.
One of the things that I love about Ghostbusters 1 and 2 is Bill Murray being so confident, even in the face of, adversity. Like, he's in the mayor's office going, it's true, this man has no dick.
Yeah.
And then he's like, it's funny when he's flirting with Sigourney Weaver in the first one, because he's got no shot, but he's it's still funny.
Yeah.
And he gets there eventually, obviously. Yeah.
That's one of those tropes of the movie, of the stuff that those guys did back then, like Caddyshack, and like they'd have these random... Like, guy falls head over heels in love with the girl right away when he meets her, and, like, that's... I don't know. I don't...
It's a bad trope because it's led to years of... It's led to those guys that they're making fun of in Answer the Call. I'm funny, like Bill Murray. Why doesn't she love me? Because you're fat and ugly, Work on yourself, buddy.
Yeah.
There's literally a joke where he says... And this is kind of a mean joke in Answer the Call. It's like, hey, it's the first time I laughed... when he's inside Chris Hemsworth, where I didn't have to suck in my tummy. It's like that actually made me very sad, because I was thinking about, like, oh man, imagine laughing and having to think about, like, sucking your tummy. And I wanted to hit back on what you're saying with, like, the oh, hey, you know, it reminds me more of the comedy of the 80s. I'm not sure that's a good thing, because I don't think comedy is cyclical as much as I think comedy evolves. And, like, there's a clear evolution in the type of comedy. We went went from the 80s to 15 years, or, excuse me, 25 years later, when we're in, you know, the mid-teens, the 2010s, the 2016.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not saying it's exactly the same. Like, if it...
It reminded you, is, I think...
It's closer. I said it's closer to. So there's more stuff that was allowed to just be like deadpan, rather than everyone's kind of making a big show of a comedy bit, like in Answer the Call, which I'm not, and just to be clear, like, I don't dislike Answer the Call. I'm just saying the comedy is not what
it's more integrated. It's less of like, oh, I'm watching a comedy. Like I'll jump ahead to and say that there is never a point in Answer the Call where I'm like scared I would show that to my kids.
Yeah.
And it's, whereas I think about whether or not to show my kids Afterlife and Frozen.
Well, that goes back to what makes a Ghostbusters movie a Ghostbusters movie. And it has moments where if you just watch the moment, you might think you're just watching a horror movie. It has a few of those.
Like when Dan Aykroyd's getting sucked off by a ghost.
No.
The dogs are scary, but they didn't scare me when I was 8.
Yeah.
But they would. I could see the dogs in Frozen Empire scaring my daughters at, you know, 2 and 4.
Like, when it's very short snippets, like, because a lot of it has goofiness mixed in, and that's fine. But, like, when Rick Moranis is pounding on the windows of the restaurant, the fancy restaurant, you know, a second later, he makes a joke about, like, having a treat for the dog. And then you know, it reminds you you're in a comedy, but just a short moment where he's tripping over the table and like trying to get in, that feels like a horror movie on its own. So it drops comedy now and then. It does.
I would argue that because he's like doing pratfalls and that sort of thing, that could be like, a subjective thing where like some people might find that funny and a child would find that scary.
I'm thinking of because I actually just watched it, that one, like a
1984.
Yeah, like a week before Frozen Empire. And that, it actually didn't look like a pratfall to me. It looks like someone, you know, tripping, you know, trying to get into it and tripping.
But again, like when someone falls over in a movie, it's usually funny. I guess it does add to the intensity of the scene. It also would probably deter, like, if you're empathizing with him as a child might, then it's scary. But if you're an adult going, ha, look at this loser, you know what I mean? Which is kind of how he's set up in the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know. And that goes to story. So like,
or when Sigourney Weaver gets attacked in the chair, like there's nothing funny there. There's no comic relief there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, like even Ghostbusters, well, no, Ghostbusters 2 has a little bit of that, but like Answer the Call doesn't have any.
No, there's nothing scary. Answer the Call. I would agree.
Not much in Afterlife either.
Since I watched it with an 8-year-old, I was aware of what was scary.
Yeah.
And in this new one, Frozen Empire, and since let's hit scares now before we go to story, I did think that I would give it to Frozen Empire for scares because the dogs, as you mentioned, and then like what's the name of the big bad in Frozen Empire?
Garaka.
Garaka. That's right. It's true. I'm sure, like, Dan Aykroyd's done lots of research, you know, because he's, like, he's all in on this stuff.
He is, but he didn't, I don't think he really had a direct hand in writing. I think that's all Jason Reitman and Gil Keenan.
Sure, but they're reverent to... That. Like, there's no way Dan Aykroyd is not, like, an uncle who can influence...
When
he's writing these scripts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, like, for instance... When Garaka puts on the horns,
yeah,
that was, I liked that because, and I wanted more of that.
And it looked, yeah, I wanted.
It took too long to get there.
Yeah,
and so I'm talking about story while I'm talking about the scares because, like, I do feel as though, from the character perspective, the character stories I like better in Answer the Call than I like them in Frozen Empire. Like, it was somewhat lame to me that they were still figuring out the family dynamic. Like, oh, how does Paul Rudd fit into this? Clearly he's the surrogate dad at this point.
Was
he's traveled
years.
With
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
It's been years. And like,
yeah.
But it seemed chintzy to me when he gets his window. Oh, I'm taking on the woman's name, or, you know, Egon Spengler is his last name, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, oh, I'm a Spengler. Like, when he said that in the movie, it was like, it's like going.
Was that at the end when they're outside?
Yes.
Out in the, okay.
Like, it's clearly, it's paying off a story arc of that character, because it's like, oh, is he really like, you know, it's playing off the first one when he's like falling in love with Carrie Coon. Like, it kind of has the Bill Murray thing with Carrie Coon.
Yeah.
Like, they make it very, very obvious.
Yeah.
But then he's mixed in with Rick Moranis' character since he gets
possessed. Yeah.
I kind of, like, he's not enough Paul Rudd. Like, Paul Rudd is vanilla comedy to me.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of Paul Rudd is like, oh, your mom will like that, and, you know, cool.
Yeah, I generally don't, like, I like Paul Rudd. His funniest, I mean, it's weird. I was kind of, like, almost trash-talking, like, the style of comedy in 2016, but, like, you said it comes off. It comes on the heels of the Judd Apatow.
Well, yeah, he's a derivative
and
of that.
And he's that. And his funniest stuff is in those movies.
Yes.
But outside of that, he's just like, oh, it's Paul Rudd. I like when I see Paul Rudd in a movie. You know that, but I'm not laughing at him.
The plastic surgery is working.
Yeah.
He seems affable.
Yeah, I don't think he's had plastic surgery.
I don't care. I mean, whatever he's doing is clearly working.
Yeah.
Because he looks like he did in the 90s.
Rubs essential oils all over his skin.
It's got to be homeopathic. So, look, story-wise, which one do you feel stronger about?
Well, I think the story of Answer the Call is probably paced better, structured better, probably. Because, you know, they get to the guy, I forget his name, was it Ronan?
Yeah, Ronan.
Rowan.
Is it Rowan? I had the subtitles on.
I think it was Rowan.
Oh, I need to clock. Is that an N or W in the middle?
When he kills himself, that happens at like about the right time.
It happens 1 hour and 15 minutes in, because it's not the end of the second act. And I was tracking that when I was watching it today. Because the real end of the second act is when Chris Hemsworth gets possessed. And then they had to shorten the third act because they take out stuff like him dancing with all the cops.
Oh, that they use in the end credits?
Yeah.
So I guess overall it's like the plot is somebody's placing devices to attract supernatural activity. That's a decent idea for a Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah. I liked the concept of Frozen Empire, but they didn't deliver on it, because I'm an hour into the movie going, when's this Frozen Empire gonna
happen? Yeah, and then the thing is, like, I didn't care about seeing a city frozen. I don't, like, who cares? Like, I don't get the obsession with, there are a lot of fanboys out there, and they love, like, oh, fucking do it in the snow. Do fucking Jason in the snow. You gotta do the next Friday the 13th in the fucking snow.
Well, that goes to our setting point later, but, like, yeah,
who gives a fuck if there's snow?
It's seeing something different. Like, most people want, this is, what's the Hollywood advice for every story?
Do something different, but the same.
Give me something the same, but different. Yeah. And
I didn't care. Like, I was just happy to see it back in New York, quote unquote New York.
So what? I agree, but it was London where they shot it mostly.
Yeah, but for the most part, like,
it didn't feel like New York at the end. From a story point of view, I feel like
they didn't have it. You didn't see enough of
New York, New York.
Yeah, you didn't see. Yeah, it's like. Jason takes Vancouver. When the whole movie's on a fucking ship.
Yes.
And the last.
He's going to New York.
Yeah.
See, it's titled for the third act.
And then anything that's not Times Square, even in that last 15 minutes, is Vancouver. Diners Vancouver.
When they have their big fight in what is New York, but predominantly Boston, and this is getting into a little bit of setting, that big fight at the end of Answer the Call, I find satisfying. Whereas in Frozen Empire, we've got to follow the mom and dad plot separate from the kid plot and kind of integrating it didn't mesh as well for me this time. And then we had to do all this nonsense with the, you know, legacy cast members who are just there because.
Well, and here's the thing, like, Afterlife's excuse for not feeling like New York is that it's not New York.
Yeah.
You're in a field at the end. But look at every other Ghostbusters movie aside from Frozen Empire. They're all taking place in New York, whether they're filmed there or not. What's the difference between them is people. There's a ton of people watching the climax unfold in the first one. There's a ton of people watching the Statue of Liberty bust through the roof of a fucking museum
in the second one.
You're talking about the fight and Answer the Call. Same thing. There's a bunch of people there.
It feels big.
It feels big because there's a lot of people.
The story feels like it's paying off something.
And then Afterlife, yeah, it's the ambience of having a lot of people present for it. If it's supposed to be in a big city, you expect to see a lot of people.
But they were shooting it on sound stages in London. So, and like part of this is my.
Well, I'm sure. I bet the fight in Boston or in Answer the Call, I bet that fight stuff was on sound stages as well. But they made sure to populate the sound stages.
Or, and this will be a weird poll, but like 2005 Batman Begins, that's mostly sound stages and stuff. Yeah. But that end fight in what is a stand in for New York, Gotham. Yeah. Feels like it's big and like, oh man, everyone's getting screwed over by what the, you know, Scarecrow's put in the water.
Yeah, it has stakes when there are people around. And yeah, Frozen Empire doesn't have that. You see people scurrying off the beach, and those cops that they showed in the beginning sweating their ass up in the car, then they're shivering in their car. Okay, fine. The vape shop guy gets killed, but you don't see big crowds of people. Like, there's no one.
The trailer sold me something. The story didn't pay.
Yeah. And so that, Empire. Yeah. So the structure was off. I enjoyed being in New York, like, you know, the firehouse and just the sense of being in New York because they told us we're in New York. Well, and going to the library, familiar location, like. The fact that, you know, so that was helping sell me on, because I knew where they filmed. I knew they didn't film most of it in New York, but it helped me feel like it was there.
Here's a story and a character thing. Why the hell does Venkman show up when he does in Frozen Empire? It's just like, well, it's time for more legacy cast members to show up. So
first time? When he first shows up?
In Frozen Empire, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, it's like, what would you, first of all, it comes down to like, I'm sure they don't want to hinge a $100 million production on Bill Murray's like unpredictability.
Well, and he screwed up Aziz Ansari's comeback movie by having to pay out $100,000 for possibly sexually assaulting somebody.
Well, just the fact that he's always been the one holding back another Ghostbusters movie.
Wasn't his idea that he wanted to be killed in the first act of a new Ghostbusters movie and then be a ghost for the rest of it?
Yeah, but he's... You know,
that sounds like Harrison Ford. Like, I don't want to be in this movie anymore.
Yeah,
I there's a lot about the story in Frozen Empire where it felt like I'm waiting for it to get going, but oh yeah, we have to get the band back together like a Muppet movie or something.
Well, I mean, really, it doesn't take long for Ernie Hudson to show up, so there's no like getting the band back to, and like, and Dan Aykroyd's in it from the jump, pretty much. So I like that about it. I like, you know, we finally have a Ghostbusters movie. You know, like I said before, it's the third Ghostbusters movie that finally is in New York and finally has a decent amount of screen time for the original characters.
Oh, that's what you meant by third Ghostbuster movie.
For all the years after, you know, from the time I was five, envisioning like wanting a Ghostbusters 3 and thinking about what that was going to look like. Think about what it would have looked like if they'd made it in a timely manner. What's the closest thing you're going to get to that? Well, Frozen Empire is the closest you're going to get to that. You're never going to get, you know.
Yeah, where they're in like 30% of the movie.
Even if they make another one after this, which they may not, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. This one did slightly better than Afterlife did, which was during COVID.
Yeah.
But it didn't do as well as Answer the Call did. So just from a box office point of view.
I think it was like 1 million less than Answer the Call and 1 million more than Afterlife.
Yeah, but in 2016 dollars after Biden inflation in 2024, and let's be honest, it's COVID inflation, it's both of the last administrations that led to.
Yeah.
So my point is that the price of a movie ticket has increased so much in the past 8 years that a lot more people saw Answer the Call than saw Frozen Empire.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've gotten the impression from people.
But also, Frozen Empire is cheap, well, 50 million cheaper than. Or more, if you also adjust for inflation, it's more than $50 million cheaper than Answer the Call.
It's $26 million.
But
in 2015,
Answer the Call was $150 million.
$126 million. I looked this up.
Really?
Yeah, it was $126 million because it's like the same price as Dune 2. Because Dune 2 was like $130 million too or something like that. And okay. Well, it's all studio math, you know what I mean? So like part of what I imagine happened is that they could sense in 2016 that they didn't have the hit they thought they would, because they thought that was going to open to like 60 or 70. It opens in the, you know, upper 40s, and it's like, that's...
For Answer the Call?
Answer the Call, yeah. Whereas I think by this point, when Frozen Empire came out, they know, oh, well, this isn't going to do as well, so yeah, we're not going to let the budget go too much beyond Afterlife, but we'll let it go a little more since we got a fake New York.
$25 million more.
Yeah. It's significant. You know, and I'm impressed Jason Reitman has kind of upscaled from, you know, Juno all the way to Ghostbusters Afterlife. It's
yeah.
impressive the way he's been able to manage those budgets and make interesting...
Yeah.
personal movies. Whereas was it Gil Kenan, his co-writer from Afterlife,
yep.
and his co-writer on this one who directed this yep. one? I maybe like Monster House of his.
Yeah, I thought Monster House was pretty good.
It's a cartoon.
It's like a Pixar style.
Yes. I like that, but then looking at some of the, he like made the Poltergeist remake.
He did, yeah.
Did you like that?
I didn't think it was bad on its own. It's better than Poltergeist 3. And probably in some ways better than Poltergeist 2. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know...
we can't have nice new things. We can only have reboots or mega sequels.
Yeah, and it's not... I mean, the characters are named differently, so it's not really a remake, technically.
Let me ask you this, and just because someone else on a podcast pointed this out, which got me to watch Poltergeist again. Do any construction workers in the reboot of Poltergeist... openly hit on a teenager, no. and everyone just laughed it off?
No, there are no construction workers. There's no pool. I don't even think it's not, they're not built on a cemetery, so there's no skeleton. It's like power lines over there. It was kind of dumb. It's not terrible, but yeah.
And Steven Spielberg ghost directed that movie.
The first one.
Yeah.
The first one, yeah.
That's like the thing. Okay, so let's get into a serious character debate. Do you like Holtzman? Do you like Kate McKinnon's performance better than McKenna Grace?
Oh, that's totally different characters. It's like apples and oranges. Why would we compare them?
Because they both occupy the Spengler, the Egon Spengler character mode, and for me, I laughed a lot more at like Holtzman licking the gun, talking about front farts, and you know, just because I saw that movie as an adult, I think I would still like it if I were a young boy or even a teen when I saw it, because I would just like that kind of energy. It's kind of like how I liked Tina Fey when I was.
That takes me back to comedy. Like, that's kind of dumb and juvenile for a Ghostbuster. Like, it was more, the humor was more sly in the original.
This man has no dick.
This man, but the way that joke was set up, though.
Dickless here, shut off the, yeah.
Is that true? Because he's asking about if it's
something
true.
Something else,
yes. Yeah.
It is
so sly.
It's sly and wry, it's not.
When Sigourney Weaver says, well, that's the bedroom, but nothing ever happened in there. And then Bill Murray says, what a crime. Like, that's not like, oh, here's a pussy fart.
How about like, the lesbian undertones?
I was disappointed. I wasn't mad. I was disappointed, and that kind of. I'm not offended by it. I'm just saying, like, that's the best.
Okay, well, here's something like sly that is in Answer the Call that is also kind of in Frozen.
The wontons are too big.
No. Holtzman has a crush on Kristen Wiig's character. I can't remember. It's tiny bow tie, and like. It shows throughout because Kristen Wiig is attracted to Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon's attracted to Kristen Wiig. And then for whatever reason, Melissa McCarthy does not find Chris Hemsworth attractive. And just that whole character dynamic is funny. It's funny. It's a funny dynamic to have Ghostbusters having crushes on each other. And it's interesting, which you would have gotten, you would think more, you know, with the heteronormativity of our world, that if they had done a mixed sex Ghostbusters before 2024, because this is the first Ghostbusters movie where there are girl and boy Ghostbusters, right? Versus just kid Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
now that everyone in it is a bona fide like Ghostbuster, they just throw on the proton, but like, yeah.
So. I guess, how do you feel about the lesbian story in Frozen Empire? Because, like, I assume why. I assume
I saw some right wing assholes.
No, I don't think talking, like
no.
The undertones.
Nerdrotic or whatever. Like
what?
The one incel that whose shit I always see on Facebook posted the video review, and it's just basically a bunch of four right wing assholes calling it the lesbian plot. I didn't pick up anything that suggested it was a romantic.
So it could go either way. Like I would say with Holtzman being attracted to Kristen Wiig's character, that's clearly like
I didn't say it wasn't. I'm talking about Frozen Empire.
I'm going to jump over to Frozen Empire. McKenna Grace's character being willing to essentially kill herself to be friends with her ghost friend who is of the same sex as her.
Sure.
It could be romantic. It could just be from her massive loneliness. It's hard to tell. And we're talking about children, so I don't want it to be explicit since she's clearly like 15, 16. But like obviously 15, 16-year-old girls can be attracted to other 15, 16-year-old girls. I mean,
that's their children, but they have attractions.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I just said. Teenagers are clearly attracted.
What I'm saying is nothing. Why would, I mean, it's anything's possible, but why even talk about it as a possibility when it wasn't explicitly?
It's a possible, because why do you think her character kills herself for 2 minutes, at which she somehow knows, having just learned about this machine, going back to why I don't think the story is as good in Frozen Empire, I did like that beat. Like, let me explicitly say, I liked that her loneliness carried over, and now she's feeling lonely from her family versus feeling lonely from the other kids at school. She meets a friend who is a ghost, and because of their connection, she decides to kill herself for 2 minutes so that she can be a ghost, right, and be what? Like, because... You know, like they could. I'm not suggesting anything beyond like because the McKenna or the ghost friend she makes says something like you'll never understand that what it's like to be, you know, like a ghost. And obviously we're given the information that Garaka is telling Ghost Girl she's got to make this happen so that they can possess McKenna Grace's character. What's her character's name?
Phoebe.
Sorry. Yes. Phoebe. And like, I'm just saying, hey, you know, you could read it that way. Nothing wrong with it to me. But there's a clear connection between, hey, there's clearly
went into it calling it the lesbian subplot.
I said lesbian undertones of each. There's clearly Holtzman is attracted to Kristen Wiig's character, and there is clearly McKenna Grace's character is so lonely she's willing to do something extreme, either from her desire for Philadelphia, you know, brotherly love, just she wants connection with somebody, or maybe there's romantic undertones. I don't know. I think it's interesting to discuss. Oh, is this teenager attracted to a same-sex teenager that happens to be dead?
I think that's so I trust that there are examples, like more explicit examples of Holtzman, that I just don't remember. What are they?
Well, specifically, she's listening to DeBarge. And she's dancing, like, suggestively at Kristen Wiig, going, hey, what are you up to? Kind of like, she's basically doing Bill Murray to Sigourney Weaver. And I would say, like, going to what is a Ghostbusters movie. You know what? I'll bring it back to this. I heard a great fucking criticism of Roadhouse in that it was, the new one, is that it's not sexy. It's sexless. Mm-hmm. I like movies that have a little bit of sex in them. I don't want Dan Aykroyd to get a blowjob from a ghost.
Yeah.
But I do like Bill Murray flirting with Sigourney Weaver. And I do like Paul Rudd having, you know, a flirtation with Carrie Coon in Afterlife. And I like that it's clear to me as a character, like the character relationships in Answer the Call are very clear. This person likes this person. This person likes that person. That person doesn't like this person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so
that carries, like, you don't have as strong of a that in Frozen Empire, except for this one thing that is very dynamic. It's like, why was she willing to kill herself for 2 minutes to be with this ghost girl? Was it just because she's so lonely? Or is it possible there's romantic undertones?
All signs pointed to being loneliness. I don't get where the lesbian thing comes from. That's why I asked you what the examples are from Answer the Call, because I trusted that there were going to be examples. And there were, but I'm like, there's your examples for that. You have nothing to go on for Frozen Empire to sell. All the right wing assholes are calling it the lesbian subplot.
You're saying that. Here's my question: if you're a teenage lesbian who likes Ghostbusters, wouldn't you like to be able to assume that when watching the movie. Like, you can see that in the movie.
They're free to assume because it's totally left blank, but they don't make anything. No, they don't make it one way or the other.
Exactly. They don't make it one way or the other. I think that's
But like, if we're just going to go on statistics, what percentage of any population is usually gay? Like 10%. So
I'm not sure we're allowed to say that anymore.
Well, like, that has been the statistic, but it's like,
yeah, but now it's,
but that means that if you don't say anything one way or the other, if you're just left to assume, you have, the odds are that it's not.
All I'm doing is making a comparison.
But it's a false comparison because they don't have any sort of
I think what you're doing is denying the possible lesbian teenage audience that could
I'm not denying the possibility, and
I was just making the comparison between two, you know, there's clearly Holtzman's attracted to Kristen Wiig. It's unclear if Phoebe has anything beyond platonic attraction to somebody, but if you're willing to kill yourself to go understand what it's like to be them, that's something beyond just like, I wouldn't, you know, hurt myself to do anything for you.
She's interested in ghosts. I mean, it would make sense that she wants to know what it's like to be a ghost. They were just talking, because they were, right, shortly before that, they were talking about it, I think, with Dan Aykroyd.
That's true. And, okay, so what I think this actually is that it's, if it's intentionally ambiguous so that people can, you know,
I think that's fine. Like,
that's,
if you
good.
Want to
that's
assume,
great.
But think about it. Like, then if we're just going on assumptions, that's a slippery slope, because then I could start assuming that Finn Wolfhard wants to fuck podcast. You know, like, well, they didn't say it one way or the other. Like, but are you really? But no one's coming to that conclusion.
Well, podcast and Finn Wolfhard don't have a connection. Like that, and we should talk about how podcast is useless in this one. He has one great joke,
sure,
and it's not even his joke. It's Dan Aykroyd saying, "My intern tells me that you should smash that like button." That's clearly,
yeah.
Oh, you need podcast there for that joke. You don't need podcast there for the rest of the gosh darn movie, which I think is a point against the story.
Yeah. They crammed too many characters in that didn't need to be, you know.
Listen, I'm not saying you have to agree there could be lesbian undertones. I'm just saying, hey, I wondered that and thought, oh, that's something I like about this, is that it could be interpreted
that
way.
Yeah, I'm fine if that's it. I'm just saying I'm seeing reviews from people who, and it's the people who seem upset about it. They're the same
people who would be like, oh, I don't want girl Ghostbusters. I don't want any sort of non-heteronormative things in my Ghostbusters.
Yeah, who are jumping into, they just call it, well, and then we have this lesbian subplot. And like, you can't call it that because
if you're coming to it from the positive direction of, if there are young LGBTQIA+2S, I think is the current it's 2024 when I'm saying this, where whenever you're listening to this in the future, podcast listener, I think I got the letters right. I'm just saying that the 13, 20, whatever, 9, you know, percent of the population that's out there that could enjoy that was something that was present in Answer the Call, and I thought it was funny in Answer the Call, and it related back to the original Ghostbuster thing of like how Venkman flirts with Sigourney Weaver,
sure,
and then, but there's nothing like the romance of the original one in this one, because Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd are already like, yeah, we've been with each other for years at this point. It's less interesting.
Yeah. I mean, does a Ghostbusters movie need the romance though? I don't know.
Doesn't someone get, don't Egon and executive admin, what's her name, who gets a gun on her wrist in this one?
Janine?
Annie Potts. Annie Potts. Yes, Janine. Phoebe and Janine. These are great characters.
Oh, you know what? Ghostbusters 2 had Janine and Rick Moranis.
Oh, it's Rick Moranis. Okay, yeah. I knew it was someone.
And Bill Murray was just crawling back to Sigourney Weaver.
Because he pissed her off.
So it's there. I don't know if you need it in a Ghostbusters movie, though.
I think people like romance. I don't know.
Well,
but that's why I'm criticizing fucking Roadhouse 2024 for not having any fucking, you know,
yeah,
romance in. Ratcatcher and fucking Mysterio have no goddamn, like, romance between them. Yeah. But Jake Gyllenhaal played Mysterio, and the woman that's in that movie played Ratcatcher in The Suicide Squad. I saw your face, and you're like, you fucking nerd. Like my wife does sometimes.
I just don't know anything.
Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal is the rare guy who is bigger than his comic book character to me, whereas every other person I refer to them as, hey, it's Batman. You
know? Yeah.
Or Batfleck might be beyond that, just because he had so much going before that. Setting in the 1984. I feel like we've just talked about setting. There, we want it to be in New York. It bothered you that you didn't see enough of New York.
Yeah, it's saying I'm glad I feel more like in the, even though it's not, I feel more that it's in New York than, than Afterlife.
Okay, but Afterlife is at least doing something.
But I wanted to see the original continuity back in New York.
Okay, so the setting for you in Frozen Empire is better because it's part of the original continuity as a legacy.
It's the original firehouse. They end up they're on the roof of a Chinese restaurant in Answer the Call.
Yeah, they can't afford the.
It's like, I guess, yeah, sure, you're, you know, self-referential.
The realtor in that scene when they're in the...
is the writer.
Yeah, Kate DePolt. And, I feel her output is mega, because she wrote Blockers, right? And that's, a funny movie.
Blockers? She wrote Blockers?
I'm pretty sure she wrote Blockers off the top of my head.
Okay.
Because I was in improv with a lady that I worked with her on that, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I can't.
What I'm going to is that the pedigree of Paul Feig and Kate DePolt, who have had separate and pretty cool careers,
is a
little bit ahead of Gil Kenan and Jason
Reitman, especially as far as comedies go.
Yeah, I guess Jason Reitman, what do you call his career before Ghostbusters? Like Juno and...
Coasting on Juno for a long time, and then... Mm-hmm. And then
he made one...
Thank You for Smoking.
I was going to say Thank You for Smoking, but there was the Charlize Theron. He made the two Charlize Theron movies that I thought were great.
Tully and Young Adult, one of which was filmed here.
Yeah, Young Adult.
Yeah.
I love Young Adult. I rewatched that recently, but it's that's an indie movie. Whereas, it kind of goes back to our debate last week of, if you've been able to master a large budget like Paul Feig and Kate DePolt have, I feel as though you're able to handle more movie than the guy who makes $5 and $10 million movies over time. Even though I like those movies, I just think that one is it's like doing different types of dives in the Olympics.
Yeah.
One is a different, more complicated type of dive.
Sure. I don't know if it has anything to do with budget. I mean, we're talking about how well do they write,
would
they have written better comedy if they had done, if Jason Reitman and Gil Kenan had done more $50-60 million movies before this? I don't think it would have.
Well, we haven't been making Hollywood hasn't been making $50 or $60 million.
I don't care. Yeah. I'm talking hypothetically.
Yeah. I know what you're saying.
What would it have? And I don't think it would have made a difference.
And we're just not. We already agree that Answer the Call has more comedy, but the scares are slightly better in Frozen Empire. Or at least some of the scares are better. Setting. You've said that it was important to you to continue continuity.
Yeah, this is the first one since Ghostbusters 2 to have the original continuity and be set in New York.
Yeah, and Afterlife is in the continuity.
And what it's missing of the New York setting is not enough people, but they still work in the iconic locations that make you feel like it's the New York that exists in the universe of Ghostbusters, which overlaps with reality. I mean, it does. The library is a real place. I don't think they really filmed it at the real library.
No, of course not. But even
the exterior.
They use a museum instead of a library. And it's a tour group at a museum versus, people in a library.
I don't know
how much I like going back.
But it's not an iconic place. Part of Ghostbusters is the setting. So it's like if you've been waiting to see, first a reboot comes along and it's not the same story, okay? Then the next one is reverting back to the original continuity, but it's in Oklahoma. Having it be set in New York there's a comfort to that. I'm not saying do the next one
they've already said they want to do, if they do another one, that they'd like to see it be international. For me, I don't have any, it doesn't do anything to be at the same library. To me, that's like, oh, you couldn't come up with a new interesting setting. I prefer Afterlife to Frozen Empire because the setting is different and it's doing something new.
Well, yeah, it was nice to see something new at first, but then now you've done something new. I do want to, like, it's almost like the firehouse is like the backyard fucking barbecues in the Fast and Furious movies. They do that in every fucking movie too, and no one complains about that.
Someday we will have a dissection of why the Fast and Furious movies are high art, just like Christopher Nolan has said. But that is not this one. So.
No, I didn't say they weren't. I just said, like
I get what you're saying.
There are things that are ingrained in the fabric of a franchise that you kind of associate it, and when they're not there,
when
something
they
feels.
The house up in Fast 7, it means something. Whereas they didn't do anything to the library in Frozen Empire. See, you just right there made me think, oh yeah, why do I like it better in Fast and Furious than I do in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? It's because they didn't do anything new with the library. They just brought new characters to the library.
So they blew up the house. That's the house that they are always barbecuing at. Cause they're still barbecuing in Fast 9 and Fast 10.
Well, yeah, if they get back to the house in 9, Nick, see, I don't want to go too far off of the thing, but yeah.
So maybe they didn't have the house in 8.
Correct. Like Fast and Furious movies are a lot like Star Trek.
So there you go. Fast, Fate of the Furious is your afterlife where, okay, we don't have the house, but then they go back to the house. And didn't people enjoy it? Didn't fans like it when they're having a barbecue at the same house where they...
Because they brought in Vin Diesel's mom or grandma. Is that what it is?
Someone. No, it's not because...
I like Fast and Furious movies for bringing Golden Girls in, like Rita Moreno and...
Then they have
Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
I like that 100 times more than I like seeing an old library with Paul Rudd going to it.
Paul Rudd didn't go to the library in this one, but...
Shows you how close I was paying attention. Yeah, it was the kids with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, no, and yeah, the library... going to the library was just, like, kind of a nostalgia thing. But it helped. It helped, you know, when you know they're not filming it in the real city, seeing something you recognize helps sell the illusion that it's in a place.
Sure.
Because you know they filmed the first one in New York. So if you see a location that looks like it, or that is an honest replica of one of those places, then that helps sell that. You know, in his bookstore,
Movie isn't treating me nice, but it brought me back to where we were on our first date, so I like that.
Well, no, because I'm going back to saying, like, what makes a Ghostbusters movie, and I think what was the definition of Ghostbusters before, I mean, like... Even with Answer the Call, it's still New York. It's supposed to be New York, even if it's in... I mean, right?
Taking place in New York, but they talk about
New York. So, like, New York is, like, until Afterlife...
It was like a character in the movie.
The backyard in... Or the house in the backyard in Fast and Furious is kind of a character in that franchise.
There's a Paul Rudd movie called They Came Together, and they make fun of the concept of New York being a character. They say... It was like a character because romantic comedies used to do that a lot when they were shooting in Vancouver.
I hate it when I hate it when, you know, Woody Allen's done it a million fucking times and
I'm used to being from New York, so you just have to understand that that's part of my character. So please just leave me alone with my adopted daughter. Hey, they stay together. So, I mean, yeah. God bless, you know.
In romantic comedies, it's like this put up on this pedestal, I guess. Like, oh, let's sit on a bench and look at the bridge.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I understand your affection for New York, and I wanted the same
thing. I don't give a shit about New York.
New York and its association with Ghostbusters. I appreciate that, and that is Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's part of the fabric of having a huge, being in the city and having a huge bunch of people. See, they didn't nail all of it because we already said they don't have the huge crowds of people like cheering them on until the very end after everything's over. So that's part of the character it's part of the fabric of the franchise of what kind of defines what the franchise is, because that's what it was until Afterlife. So we got our departure one, and now once you've had a departure one, it's good to come back. Like if the next one was in New York and in the firehouse, then it would feel.
Well, the setting was very different in Answer the Call because they didn't put nut cups in the suits.
That's not the setting.
I know. Just kidding. Okay, let's hit the gear.
I don't know anything about the gear.
I was just gonna say, I think the car is cooler in Frozen Empire, but I like the way the guns are used, the proton packs in Answer the Call better. So like, point to the car in Frozen Empire because it has like the drone and stuff in it, and it has the side like, oh, that's really cool. And that did like, I did like that, but it didn't give me anything more than I saw in the preview.
Yeah,
but it's still a cool idea that they'll have cool toys off of.
Well, and just like, again, the gear kind of travels with the continuity. So like, I'm going to go with the stuff that, and I'm always for sequels over reboots. So, I am. I mean, like why did Answer the Call have to be a reboot?
Because it's hard to deal with it's the problem that Afterlife had of, well, if there was this huge, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that walked through, like, if Godzilla had walked through New York in the 19 before we were born,
yeah,
you would still know and talk about that. That's not something we'd forget about. And that's kind of the problem Afterlife had, is like, those kids were two generations removed, so they weren't as familiar with it. And
but
they give you a story reason as to why Carrie Coon hasn't passed on that tradition to the kids, is because Ian Spengler was Egon Spengler was
absentee father.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But I mean, saying like with some story adjustments, yeah, it would have required some story adjustments. But Answer the Call could have just been like, why couldn't they have been taking over from? You could have had them taking over, Ghostbusters from, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
I'll hit you with the legacy character bit then, as I like that we get they have like the handing of the baton in Answer the Call. Like, everyone's doing something new. They literally kill Bill Murray at one point, because he's the a minor antagonist.
Yeah.
And then Dan Aykroyd gets to have his little bit. And, everyone's, like, enough of the former people are still involved. And actually, that Sigourney Weaver isn't in either of Afterlife and Frozen Empire bothers me. And that she isn't referred to bothers me, because she has better things to do.
She is in Afterlife.
Sigourney Weaver's in Afterlife?
She's in the mid-credits scene.
What is she doing? Oh, yeah.
She's doing the card. Sixth Sense.
That matters nothing to the story.
It doesn't.
Don't get her in Frozen Empire, so that pisses me off.
Like, yeah, well, you really, how could you have worked her in, though,
Well, she's still alive, right?
She's still alive. No, but I mean,
could you work her in? Well, you put Venkman in there for no reason, right? He has no purpose in the story other than to show up and be like, hey, guys, remember me? I was in the first two.
Yeah, I mean, but, and yeah, in the end, I don't know if any of the other Ghostbusters present at the end have any real role in, other than, it's all Phoebe and Nadim. Phoebe with her brass proton pack.
Yes. Right?
And Nadim mastering his fire.
Yes, that's
so
right.
Four, if you count any pots, are kind of inconsequential, but they're all there, and it's like, it would be weird to not have Bill Murray there if the other two are there, and he's already in the movie.
I usually like Kumail, and I usually like Patton Oswalt, but I did not care for them in Frozen Empire, just to go back to...
Really? Why?
I just, like, something about, like, them kind of playing cliches of themselves, and everything about, and this is just metatextual to me, Kumail's character is like, every time he was doing his fire thing, which is cool for Ghostbusters lore, is I was just thinking, like, man, it's still got to bug him that Eternals didn't work out.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, I couldn't tell you.
He's basically a similar type character where he's got, like, magical powers in Eternals. So every time he was doing that stuff, it was distracting me because I have the Eternals in the back of my mind.
Oh, yeah.
You're never going to watch that movie, even though, what's her name, Chloe Zhao. You could watch that movie and watch no other Marvel movie, and that would be the most satisfying way to ingest the Eternals, because I think what people didn't like about it, kind of like they bitch about Ghostbusters stuff, like, we didn't have enough of the thing they went before, it's like, it didn't connect to the other Marvel movies. Like, the thing you hate is why what I would tell you to watch Eternals is because it doesn't connect to the other Marvel movies as much. It's its own thing from, like, it's a $200 million movie from this lady who made, what was that?
Nomadland.
Yeah. And I haven't seen, I want to see the movie she made before that, but Nomadland, man, that movie depressed me.
Yeah, I mean, I bet.
Have you seen, you've seen
no, it? But I mean, like, Frances McDormand shitting in a bucket.
There's more than that. That's the first 15 minutes. But just her being intentionally poor, and then, like, the movie kind of traffics in, like, hey, here's these people who have nowhere to live, that Frances, two-time Academy Award winner Frances McDormand is doing some, you know, sightseeing with, like, yeah, both her character and the actress.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's hit this from the top, just to end it, since I think we've kind of talked through all the things. The funny, we gave to Answer the Call. Yay? Nay?
Yeah, more quantity of comedy, yes.
Quality of comedy, you would give
quality to... I depends on what you're in the mood for.
Yeah, it's usually subjective. So
if I want more, a little bit less in your face comedy and less improv-ing, and just something that's a little more sly, a little more deadpan, I would go Frozen Empire. It feels closer to, still not identical to, but closer to, more in the spirit of that comedy. It's still not identical.
That's the thing, is that Patton Oswalt and Kumail Nanjiani, I like them when they're in dramas as comedic performers. I don't like their comedy, so when I see them in a comedy, it reminds me of their comedy.
Oh,
like Patton Oswalt's comedy. I liked him when he shows up in guest starring roles and other things. I like Ratatouille, you know, but I like him in The Fan. I like him in Young Adult. I just don't like when I watched his stand-up, and then he's being more like his stand-up character, because his stand-up is him about him being a loser nerd, and in Frozen Empire he was a loser nerd.
Yeah. And I'm not familiar with his stand-up, so yeah, it make me think of anything. And I'm not even familiar with Kumail Nanjiani's stand-up.
I don't think
I even knew he did stand-up.
He's more a writer and actor now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think of him, and I think of Mike and Dave Need Wedding Days. So I thought he was funny in that. I think of Kings of Summer. That fucking Answer the Call ripped off the wonton joke from, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. I'm not thinking of stand-up, so...
So the story, who are you giving it to? Frozen Empire or Answer the Call?
Answer the Call has a clear, through line. Like, the plot is actually in... it unfolds in a more structured way.
But Ghost Haunting and Scares, you got to give up to Frozen Empire. Oh, I'm not going to fight that. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm more into the characters in Answer the Call and their relationships. I do really like Phoebe in Frozen Empire, but there's just too much BS. Like, podcast being in Frozen Empire is like, why did he come all the way up?
Well, and the girl, Finn Wolfhard's, would-be girlfriend.
Was she in Frozen Empire?
Yeah.
Where was she?
The one who worked at the skate diner in...
Oh yeah. They carry over too many characters that I don't feel.
Yeah, it's like
they're bringing in the legacy characters. It's just
they felt the need to. Well, it makes sense to have the legacy characters there. I mean, they're
versus when they came out to Oklahoma too.
Yeah, they're rooted in New York. Whereas now you had two people from Oklahoma
when they played Deus Ex Machina in the Afterlife.
Yeah.
So setting, I think we might have disagreement here. Which you prefer, the setting of Frozen Empire because it's in New York, and
because this is basically the first time since Ghostbusters 2 that we've seen the original Ghostbusters being Ghostbusters in New York
for 35 years. That's what you wanted, and for me, I think that the setting of both, like, the end fight in Answer the Call feeling big is why I'd say Answer the Call over Frozen Empire. And then just, I'm nationalist in the way that makes sense, to bastardize an Aaron Sorkin line where he says something much worse than nationalist. I go for the one made in America versus the one made over in England, with no offense meant towards our, you know, fine folks over there and across the pond. I just would prefer movies be made in the United States versus them be made in Europe. So
why did they make it there?
Because they have better tax incentives. Yeah. And I think that that's something we should change here, and we should grow our industry, because that would be, you know, good.
Sure.
That's a completely separate conversation. We don't have to.
Yeah, that's a production thing. That when we talk about setting, it's what's in the movie.
And so we have disagreement on that. Gear, I would say split decision for me, because I like the way, I like that there is some evolution of the gear and explanation of how the gear like evolves in Answer the Call, but the car is way cooler.
I think, yeah, I mean, I guess they kind of explained, or they had a scene where they're kind of explaining how it works when you don't have that at all, even in the first Ghostbusters.
Yes.
I don't think. I don't think they ever, they say what.
They talk about it being nuclear.
Well, it's nuclear, but like that's it.
They don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams, but that's, you know, no, they go from not having any of this stuff to all of a sudden they have all this stuff. And, yeah. I mean, we can assume Egon built it, but,
Well, like, how did they get the money to build the things they built? Oh, because of Ernie Hudson. See, Ernie Hudson's like the deus ex machina of Frozen Empire, because he comes in at the end of Afterlife. It's like, I'm really rich, so now yeah. you can do anything you want. You can have the firehouse. You can yeah. have, you know, the side, basically the same thing the Ninja Turtle van had now in the Ghostbusters mobile. Or was there a version of the Ghostbusters mobile maybe in the cartoon where they had the...
I never really watched the cartoon.
I did a little bit. I wasn't allowed to, but I did a little bit. Legacy characters, I'm going to make the argument we got to give it up to Answer the Call, because at least they did something new with them, whereas in Frozen Empire, all the legacy characters are dragging the movie down.
They didn't have legacy character. We're talking about characters, not actors. They didn't.
Okay.
Have,
well, the leg.
And it pisses me off to see Bill Murray in a Ghostbusters movie not playing Peter Venkman. That pisses me off. And Dan Aykroyd playing a cabbie, and Ernie Hudson playing a funeral home guy. That pisses me off.
So we both have a negative thing toward the other movie in terms of like it bothered me because it's like this is not necessary in Frozen
and,
Empire.
Well. I don't think it dragged Frozen Empire down. I don't think it did. I mean, like,
it hurt the story because there were too many things going on. If they reduced the number of characters, like, you could have given more to Finn Wolfhard's girlfriend, who I forgot about.
But yeah, but like, it makes more. But err on the side of the characters whose presence makes more sense, and that's the legacy characters. Like, they had to stretch to get two characters from Oklahoma to New York.
Yes,
and so if you're going to take something out, take away the ones who shouldn't be there. Who you had to come up with more of a reason for them to be there. Everything that Dan, so yeah, mainly,
that was us. We were supposed to be done so long ago. We're so sorry, podcast.
Mainly, Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, as far as legacy, because, you know, Annie Potts showed up a couple times. She didn't, you know, she didn't do anything to drag it down. Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, every time they're there, they're, I mean, they are maybe involved in scenes that maybe like they're the whole.
Ernie Hudson is a plot device to fix the financial woes of what is established in Afterlife.
Yeah, but if that's what you're going to call it, that's that blame rests on Afterlife to make that they made that choice in Afterlife. I'm talking about Frozen Empire.
Yeah, it's a decision that continues over that I don't like because. As we've discussed, what makes Ghostbusters is part of the blue-collar nature of them being kind of like losers and on the outside, and if you've got enough money, you're not.
Yeah, so they don't nail the original. Like, none of them have really, like...
None of them have done something new, and if you do too much new, people will freak out. Even you have these things that you want, like you want it to be in New York, and I agree, it is part of what is Ghostbusters. I want Sigourney Weaver to be in more than a post-credit scene in what I'm calling 4 and 5.
Sure.
I wanted her, if we're gonna shove every freaking character, or excuse me, 3 and 4 is what I should have said, because I just, yeah. Answer the Call is just 3. It's kind of like with Jurassic's, we're just saying the
yeah, well, Halloween's at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sorry I saw Frozen Empire. I'm not sorry they made it. I would prefer either redoing it in a new way to update it so that it makes sense. Because the other thing you have to like take along with you when you make Lego sequels is all the bad stuff that was made in another time. Like if they didn't reboot Bad News Bears with what's his name?
Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, they'd have to. Thank you, my namesake. Excuse me, not my namesake. I'm a Farks brother. You know, you take on all the bad stuff from Bad News Bears 1 and 2 that is culturally not okay anymore. Just like kind of it's culturally not okay anymore to have I just remember the blowjob scene being inappropriate in some way and not relevant to the plot in 1984's Ghostbusters.
Yeah. It's not relevant to the plot. Yeah, but like...
But now kids need to keep that in mind when they're watching Afterlife because and Frozen Empire because that's part of the text.
But they don't have to know it.
If they just don't watch Ghostbusters, but why are you watching Afterlife if you haven't watched Ghostbusters 1980?
Well, kids now, they don't care about the continuity.
I'm not going to agree that kids today don't care about the continuity. You can have that opinion, but
they
I
can
do not.
Afterlife, you could walk into Afterlife. And
just like I'm okay with lesbian undertones, I also believe the kids care about continuity.
Yeah, I still would say there are no lesbian undertones. Like it could be a lesbian thing, just like you could see any pair of girls on the street and assume maybe they are.
The example I'll give that you I don't recall if you have this frame of reference is that what people want Poe and Oscar Isaac and what's his name? John Boyega's character in Star Wars to get together.
Wait, who?
In Star Wars 9, they wanted a bunch of people on the internet wanted John Boyega and what's his name? The Poe, the actor who played Poe. I can't think of it.
Oscar or something?
Oscar Isaac, yeah. They wanted Oscar Isaac and John Boyega to be romantic in Rise of Skywalker, but because that movie got rewritten, you know, over and over, that never made it if it was ever in a draft. I'm just saying, let the people have what they want. Let them ship whoever they want.
I'm not saying, but I'm disagreeing because you, again, called it, went right into it, calling it the lesbian subplot.
An undertone is what I said. It's a possible undertone. Wait, where were we at before that I'd made a dissociation of this as a joke?
What?
You were saying continuity doesn't matter. And I'm saying, I think the kids care about a continuity. I also think they like being able to assign undertones that they may want to assign. And I'm just,
yeah,
I want them to have the space to do that.
They can assign it, and that's fine. Not speaking it one way or the other lets them do that, especially when...
See, the kids have to accept that Dan Aykroyd got a blowjob from a ghost, whereas they can attach these undertones with this Lego sequel. But in a reboot, we don't have to care about any of that, and we can try new stuff and not freak out, I would argue.
I think there's just as much of a chance of a kid who watched Answer the Call being shown the original Ghostbusters with the blowjob as much as there would be a chance, no more or less of a chance than a kid today.
But you're saying you care about the continuity and you prefer legacy sequel to reboot.
Yeah.
And so that means bringing all the continuity forward into the next one. And I'm just saying, you know, if we're going to do new things, let's do new things. Well, ultimately, wouldn't you rather have 2024's Ghostbusters come out this year? Not Ghostbusters, but like something that is equivalently as massive for society, you know?
Oh, I would welcome that. I'm not counting on it.
Oh, of course not. That's like a once-in-a-generation thing, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it happens, and I feel like we've had, you know, comedy blended genres that in our lifetime that have had cultural relevance.
Yeah.
And just won't.
Well, like when Scream came out, I was like, oh, this, and it became clear that this is big. Like, oh, this is a new, like, you know, the things from the 80s, the Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Street. This is a new one of those.
Yeah. It's a postmodern version of that.
Sure. It's something that's new, but like, in it's new, but the same. It's different, but the same.
So, and they refer to those things, and they give credit, they, you know, they give due to those things while...
Well, it has nothing to do with them giving credit or being self-referential, or it has nothing to do with that. It's like, here's a new horror icon. That's all. That's all it is. Here's a new horror series that is going to be big. It's going to be a big deal.
And what I thought made, and I would argue for Scream, is that it's a satire. Like, on some level, that's why, like, Scary Movie doesn't work, because it's a hat on a hat. It's, the satire was in the characters being aware of horror movies and then being in a horror movie themselves. Scream.
I don't think that's satire. Satire is, you're exaggerating something to make the point about.
Yeah, they exaggerated the slasher movie into being self-aware.
They didn't,
that's a form of exaggeration, is to be self-aware. 100%. We'll have to end on that, I imagine, because we're talking about Ghostbusters and now we're going in a different direction.
I'm just saying, yeah, I would love for something that's the equivalent of Ghostbusters to come along.
Yeah,
same. If you are going to make a movie with the Ghostbusters title, I would prefer it's a continuation, because it's not like doing a reboot, like Answer the Call. It's not like that becomes the equivalent of the first Ghostbusters, or like the 2010s equivalent.
No, we started this conversation by saying we can't have nice new things. We can only have reboots and mega sequels. But eventually we might have some.
But I'm saying, if you're going to make a movie in the franchise, I'm always going to prefer that it's a sequel and not a reboot.
Sure.
No matter what franchise.
I think there's fine examples of reboots and fine examples of mega sequels. But ultimately what we both like is new things that are it was somewhat of a risk in 1982 or 83 when they greenlit the movie to go, hey, let's make a horror movie, but let's put comedy guys in it.
Yeah.
Let's design a horror movie with comedy guys.
Yeah.
I want something like that. A genre blend, you called it an exaggeration. Scream is an exaggeration of...
Well, you said it's exaggerated. I'm saying it's not an exaggeration.
It's self-aware horror. That's new. It's like how elevated horror was new in... Elevated horror is a new concept that has come about in recent times, right? Like when elevated horror started, like 2010 or something like that.
Yeah.
So like what I'd like to see is, instead of comedy horror, instead of whatever we're calling Scream, self-aware horror, and then elevated horror, I want some new kind of horror, maybe. Maybe that's what we'll get.
Yeah,
maybe.
I would like, what's the next, whether it's, how specific are you going to get? Whether it's the next blending of horror with comedy people, that's somewhat specific, or just a blending that is unexpected. Horror with comedy people was...
Or
something that's culturally
relevant,
yeah,
and is new. Culturally relevant and new.
I welcome any of that stuff. I just, you know, I don't hold my breath for it.
Well, we're gonna make that someday.
Sure.
That's what we're doing. Let's end on that.
Okay.
Farks Brothers out.